This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, it is a Thursday. It is Wake Up Call, and it is a throwback Thursday today. We'll go back in time to give you what happened on this date. But, we give you the news of the day, too. And I've tried to not be so doom and gloom. I want to continue to be positive and try to be optimistic. But, we got to give it to you as it comes in. Two things that happened yesterday in terms of cancellations for future sporting events on the calendar. Wimbledon officially is canceled. And this we knew earlier in the week. There was a German official that spoke to the media and said, Wimbledon's going to be off the table. And we're like, really? Oh, well, yeah, trust me, it's going to get canceled. And so everybody reported it is canceled. And then Wednesday, they officially canceled it. Now, here's what's interesting. Because people were going on Twitter to say, hey, all these other tennis tournaments have been postponed. It's still early. We're talking July. You've already canceled it. Well, there's a lot of preparation that goes into these tournaments. Everybody knows that. If you put on a golf tournament, it's almost a year-round thing, for example. Tennis is no different. You got to train ball boys. There's people that you got to, you're always in and out of the facility getting an event ready for the competition. But the French Open has postponed their tournament until September, and the US Open in August is still set in stone. So why Wimbledon? Well, the real reason is because of the grass courts, right? There is a sort of time period that you want to make sure that the grass courts are manicured properly, up to the competitive level that you want it to be. They're not ruined because you're playing on a surface that Mother Nature is going to be trying to be taken care of too. It's kind of part of the process. So in that regards, there's no other place on the calendar for them to really push. They can't push it to the fall, with cold temperatures coming in. So you do what you have to do. You don't want to play it on another courts or anything like that. See, they canceled it, which is fine. But also, the British Open, the Open Championship, has now been canceled to the coronavirus. Now, that was going to be set for Royal St. George's in July. We're really starting to look far ahead into the calendar, and I get it. I know you have to have people coming in to help you out, and it's built out over months, not weeks. But at the same time, it's starting to get like, wow, we're already starting to scratch off things in July.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver. It is a Throwback Thursday. We're going back to 1995, all right, which in my calendar of my life doesn't feel like it was that far away, but in reality it was 25 years ago, so put that in some sort of context, if you will. When I was younger, anything that was 25 years ago was, it might as well have been when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth, right? Like if it was 1980, 81, 82, and you were talking about something from the 50s, early 60s, to me as a kid, that might as well have been cavemen times. But now as I'm older, 25 years, I'm like, oh, really? Oh, yeah. Was it really 25 years? Has it been 25 years?
Kind of hurts.
It does. It does. And that's what, like, all my adults my whole life always said. And I never believed them. And then I got older and I went, oh, yeah, I now know what you're talking about. Time is all compressed, right? This is why people say you don't want to live forever. Because if you live forever, the decades become like minutes in your head.
What is it that there's like that meme floating around or something like that, that we're further away from 1985 than 85 was from 55.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I just, you think about that. It's like, no. 55, 80, when Back to the Future came out, 55 was so ancient.
That's right. He went back into ancient times. And now it's like, oh, no, he just went back a couple of minutes in my calendar. The reason we're going back to 1995, because on this date, the Major League Baseball strike came to an end after 232 days. from 1994 to 1995. A lot of games were missed, including the postseason of 94. And Major League Baseball had the strike ended when a circuit judge by the name of Sonia Sotomayor basically ruled against, it was a, kind of against the owners. I think it was had something to do with replacement players and whatnot, and players had filed an injunction. Anyway, the owners couldn't appeal, so they had to play under the old collective bargaining agreement. Now, here's what makes this kind of we had a couple to decide on. We were going to go UNLV 1990. It's their anniversary of winning the national championship. Well, we talked about UNLV during March Memories, so we went with this because there is a similar situation going on, but it's not quite similar in a way because we don't have baseball, and we didn't have baseball in the latter half of 94 in what looked like going into 95. Major League Baseball owners were going to use replacement players. They were going to bring in minor league baseball players, non-union players, and they were going to pay them $5,000 to report to spring training and $5,000 if they made the roster, and then get, you know, work out a deal once they made played on the team. And this was a lot of money to those minor league baseball players and who wanted to get a chance at being Major League Baseball players. And a lot of them were kind of from, you know, they kind of knew the union and how powerful it was. And it was a major decision because if they had crossed over to play, what would their status be in terms of becoming a Major League Baseball player? Would they be allowed into a union when they crossed the picket line, even though they weren't a union, but they were basically defying a union that they wanted to join eventually at some point in their careers? But here's the thing. This was all about money, and this was all about a system of economics that most fans didn't really care about, that most fans didn't really have a stake in. The owners wanted a salary cap. They didn't really have a commissioner, right? And the players fought vehemently against a salary cap. They knew that they were in a great position as athletes, that they could command whatever the market brought. It didn't matter. And it's sad that Kansas City can't compete economically with the Dodgers, and it's sad that the Pirates can't compete economically with the Yankees, but that's just the way it is. And that's the way they wanted it. And Major League Baseball said, oh, no, we got to make it more even across the board. We got to make sure that there's a salary cap so that everybody is on a competitive level. Players said no. Now, this was an economic system baseball fans really couldn't have cared less about. Oh, sure, you'd hear a little bit of argument. You know, it'd be like, well, I think it really stinks to be a fan of a team that's raising players for the Yankees and raising players for the big market teams. I had a really good friend in college that was a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. And it was interesting because the early part of the 90s, the Pirates are in the playoffs. They had Barry Bonds. They had Bobby Bonilla. They had Andy Van Slyke, right? They were in the playoffs. They just didn't make it to the World Series. But even he knew he wasn't going to keep those guys, right? They eventually they would move on. They would go on to somewhere else. But when baseball came back, no one went to games. People were booing. People were angry. It's going to be different this time around.
Yeah.
Right? When baseball comes back, it's going to be different.
It'll have that post 9/11 feel.
Right. We're going to be excited to have games back. When that moment comes where there's a feeling like you can go to the ball game and be safe and we've got this under control, there's going to be a euphoric feeling that we're getting back. It's going to be different. But this was a hard thing for baseball because here, people forget the 94 season, how great the 94 season was. The Montreal Expos were killing it. Right. Yep. In the National League, the Yankees were killing it in the American League. And for Yankee fans, this was a big deal because they were not a very good baseball team for a good portion of the latter half of the 80s and into the 90s. They weren't very good and they were starting to get better. And they were in first place in the American League East and on their way to the playoffs that got cut short. Montreal Expos, same thing. We had Tony Gwynn. What was he batting at the time? Tony Gwynn was batting like .390, wasn't he?
I think he might have been higher.
Might have been higher. You might have been right.
I mean, he would have, if he, basically what would have happened is if he had kept doing what he was doing and just averaged what he was doing the entire first half of the season, or what, because the strike was started about August.
August, right.
If he had kept doing what he had been doing all season long, he would have batted over 400.
Yeah. I mean, he was on his way to a 400, could have been, you know, a 400 hitter. for the season. I know Matt Williams was on his way to Roger Maris's record, right? He had like 45 home runs or something like that. Ken Griffey Jr. had 40 home runs at the time. We had a really good baseball season in 94 that was cut short for this. But look, I was one of those guys, and I remember because I just started working at this radio station, and I remember thinking that, okay, a strike, this is lost revenue, they're all going to get back to the table, they're all going to come to some sort of agreement soon, right? There's that the strike and the players were going to realize, oh man, we got to give a little, and the owner, but they didn't. Nobody did anything, and they canceled the whole season. There was no World Series. And then it was heading into the spring, and we weren't seeing baseball again, and was like, oh God, well, this is going to be awful. And then all of a sudden, April 2nd, 25 years ago today, they went, yeah, strike's over. We're going back to work. And listen, this had some ramifications. Remember when I told you I was part of that alumni baseball game? Remember
yes.
I got to play?
So you crossed the picket line? Is that what you're going to tell us?
No. So I wanted to be part of this. I got invited to play in this baseball game in Colorado Springs, this alumni game for the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. And it was awesome because I got to get dressed up and everything. It was pretty fun. But the pitcher that I faced, right, and I struck out against, was a guy that crossed the picket line, and he went into, like, he wanted to play baseball, and he reported to Rockies training camp, and he never got into the majors. And somebody told me they really, really felt it was because he crossed over. It wasn't because of talent. He felt that he was a really good pitcher. He was like an MVP and when he was with the Sky Sox, and he's one of their best players. But there was a feeling. You can't really prove it, right? Nobody's going to come out and tell you that. But there was, people told me that guy never made it, and they think it's because he reported to Rocky spring training and was willing to take that $5,000 and willing to take that $5,000 if he had made the roster that year. And that was the case for a lot of people. That was the case for a lot of people. Michael Jordan, one of the reasons he decided to come back was he did not want to be one of the minor league pawns in the game between the owners and the union. He was a union guy in basketball. He was a players union guy in basketball. And he felt solidarity with a union he wasn't a part of. He was playing minor league baseball, but he felt a solidarity with the professional union because he was a professional athlete himself. And so he didn't want to cross the picket line. He didn't want to be used by the owners on an opening day roster used.
Literally, he was just taking a break because of gambling debts.
That's right. Anyway, so you know, why make this even further problematic than it already was? So this is one of the reasons I love Throwback Thursday, these history moments where we have, and yeah, it's amazing it's 25 years ago. But yeah. I'm glad it's going to be different when baseball comes back. I'm glad it's going to be different because this baseball got hit. I mean, my God, I remember how people said they would never go to the games again.
Well, it never picked up until summer 98.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's the only, I mean, that was the saving grace. Steroids saved baseball, and it's about time Major League Baseball recognizes it.
Oh, of course. Of course. Really was. Because even Cal Ripken breaking the record in 95 didn't.
We watched for that one fleeting moment.
That's it. And then we still went back to you guys are greedy, selfish, shame on both of you.
Exactly.
I mean, the players would try to make their case, and people were like, I don't want to hear it, man. I don't want to, like, I don't care. I'm not on your side. I kind of get it, but I don't want to get it. And the same thing with the owners. The owners would be like, we're trying to put a competitive balance. Like, we don't care either. Shut up. Both of you. Both of you. Sit down at a table and figure this stupid thing out. I had season tickets, or I was rooting for this, or I was rooting for that. And you guys took it away from us. And you did it because you're both, shame on both of you. And, you know, and it was hard. It was hard to watch the 94 season, as good as it was, just collapse.
I wonder, one of the things, you know, you'd mentioned them. If Montreal had made it to the playoffs, and say Montreal made it to the World Series, and say they won.
Right.
Play all the what ifs.
Very realistic.
Very realistic, because they had a crazy, crazy
really
team.
Really good team.
Would that have saved baseball in Montreal?
It could have. It could have. That's a good question. It could have.
We'll never know. I mean, obviously, you know, if you don't know, Montreal became the Washington Nationals. But that could have saved baseball in Montreal.
Yeah, you don't. That's a great what if. That is a great sports what if, because again, you're talking about something that would have really carried on all for a good period of time. Right, it wouldn't have just been, well, what have you done for me lately? You would have rode that for a while, and it would have.
Yeah, we see it all the time.
Yeah, sure, we do.
You see, like, you know,
good point.
I mean, we see it. You know where we always see it? We see it in Florida. We see it with Miami. We see it with Tampa Bay, where they have terrible numbers, but when that team is hot, the stadiums get packed.
Yep, yep.
And then for some reason, it keeps. You know, we still have professional teams in Florida, even though nobody goes and watches them. Nobody's
right.
a fan.
That's right. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call. All right. Coming up, what could happen next week that could be really interesting for the NFL? That's next.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. One little quick story about that strike. We're celebrating 1995, the end of the baseball strike. When I was working at this radio station, my sports director was a guy by the name of Rich Levine, and he was kind of a cool guy to work under. But we had this promotion that we were going to go to a Red Sox. We were going to take a bunch of listeners to a Red Sox game. We were going to get on the bus, and we had two stations in the building, and so like the rock station and our AM station, you could call in to win, and you could go and show up at remotes, and you could register to win, and it was a whole. Get on a bus, go down to Fenway Park. It was going to be dinner vouchers or something, like you could, you know, to get dinner while you're, you know, food while you're at the ballpark and all of that stuff. We're going to celebrate the Red Sox. Well, it got canceled, obviously, by the strike. But before, we had it scheduled for like June or something. And we all gathered for, you know, all the listeners came to gather for the bus, and we didn't have a bus. The bus company didn't show up. So we had to, and we had all these listeners at this restaurant and no bus. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting for the bus. And they missed, you know, we had miscommunication. So what they did was, because they had the tickets, we had the tickets. Now this is something like I would have panicked. Like I was young.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, I freaked out. I was like, you know, people are coming up to me because I'm wearing the radio shirt and they're asking me like, where is the bus? And me and, you know, I was like, I don't know. I'm just pure part of the promotion. So we had the tickets. So Rich just basically called everybody together and said, hey guys, look, we don't have a bus. We don't know why we don't have a bus, but this is something we're going to figure out. I have the tickets and I have your vouchers. I can give them to you if you're willing to drive down on your own. These are tickets you can have for today's game. We just can't go as a group, but they're yours if you want them. If you can take yourself down there, you know, park yourself and all that stuff. But I promise you, we are going to reschedule this and every single one of you will get to go. So you'll get to go to today's game on your own and we'll reschedule for another time later in the season. It was a pretty, you know, it was just a lot of people took him up on it. No, but no hard feelings and whatnot. And, you know, he kind of saved the day. So we scheduled for another Red Sox trip for, I don't know, September or something. And of course the strike happens and we don't get to go, but we went to, We ended up rescheduling for a Pawtucket game late in August or something. So we made it good on that in that regards. But I remember like being really like nervous. Like it's like my first radio promotion that completely blew up. But here's the cool thing. It wasn't the last radio promotion that completely blew up. It almost prepped me for the number of other disappointments that I've had in my career.
In that situation, were you prepping like, okay, my car, let me clean out my car real quick.
Yeah, right.
I could probably fit three. I can easily fit three, possibly four.
Maybe, yeah. I kept thinking if I had a car that could make it to Boston and back at the time. It was probably on a rubber band and some string. So that is one memory I did. The Pawtucket game that we went to, I had never gone to a real, like a minor league park before. I think I went when I was young, but It was kind of fun. It was kind of neat. I mean, it was baseball, but it was, you know, we all knew the strike was occurring and Major League Baseball was shut down, but Minor League Baseball was still going on. So, but that was a fun time. We got the bus and everything, and that was kind of neat. But
not to interrupt here, but that's a question I'm still curious about. Is Minor League Baseball even going to have a season?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you know, obviously, we're concerned about professional baseball, and I think it might be easier to get professional baseball once the all clear sign comes up because owners will be pushing for that more. But minor league baseball, which usually has lower attendance anyways, do we even look their way?
Yeah, that's right. That's a great question because, again, you're talking about what baseball wants to do is come back in some capacity of, hey, maybe we come back to empty stadiums or however. Like if we're kind of in the clear and maybe we play in front of small, maybe we only allow 5,000 into a stadium or 10,000 into
and
a stadium,
sitting,
whatever.
Like every third seat.
Right. What do you do in all these minor league towns? What do you go down that avenue? Do you do the same model in these small areas of the country that kind of like having their minor league team operational?
If you think about it, I mean, if you're talking about a minor league team, are you putting on a game? Are you putting on an event for 100 people?
Right.
Because that's what it'll come down to.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I mean, and the other thing too is if you're baseball, how important does your minor league system become when you're, you know, keeping players active and you've got the younger group that guys that could get called. Do you want to continue with business as usual? Meaning there's a place for my player to go rehab, right? So he's going to go down to Albuquerque or he's going to go down to Columbus or whatever it is. Do you keep that system in place where you bring guys up, they're playing pretty well, they get called up, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it something where you go, look, we're going to be real bare to the bones here. We're not going to have everybody. Maybe we keep our AAA open, but you know, that single A Appalachian League is not going to make it, right? We're not going to be able to fund that, or we're not going to be able to fund the Gulf South League, or whatever these leagues are, right? That becomes a real question because how do the economics fit into all of this, right? I mean, it's we're already wondering they're already talking about possible pay cuts for athletes in the NBA, right, with the cut season short. I'm sure Rob Manfred has it on his table about how he can economically pay the guys the kind of salaries that they're getting in the major league level without the revenue coming in. How do you do it for minor league players? How are you doing it for the guy that's a pitcher for the Kingston Blue Jays or whatever? You know, I mean, you don't know. You know, it's that's a really good question. That's a really good point. Because it is tough. I mean, again, it's like we've been saying all this whole time. Look, all the rules are different. You're going to have to reshape everything. You got to sometimes look at your business model now and sort of rip it up and start all over again about how you're going to get things back. What's very important? Is it getting on the field for television with no fans, or do you need the fans, right? If you're Rob Manfred, do you go, look, I need the ticket sales. Right, we absolutely need ticket sales. So we can't come back until we can get fans in the seats. Or does the television revenue matter enough where you go, yeah, you know what? We can play in front of empty stadiums for now because that's at least some revenue stream. And that's going to at least help us out. Right. All these leagues are going through this kind of conversation. I'm sure the NBA is having these same kind of conversations again. Like, all right, if we come back, what will it look like? How will it look like? What can we do to keep this business operational? Because there's just not endless amounts of money, right, with these leagues. I mean, they all deal in numbers that are gigantic, right, with lots of zeros on the other end. But it's not self-funding forever. Like, eventually you're going to have to figure out a way to bring in revenue or you're not going to have any money to pay anybody, right? Bryce Harper can only get those big checks so many times. Eventually he's got to play baseball to earn that money. Like, he can't just keep collecting it, right? And the Phillies can't just keep paying him. Eventually he's got to play baseball to earn that kind of, there's got to be baseball to be played to earn that kind of money. Or eventually the checks stop. And it's funny because, again, it's something you and I have been saying, and it's so true in all of these cases, all of these cancellations. Who tells us we're cool? Like, who is the guy that's going to say you can play baseball again in front of people? Like, who is? I'm still wondering. Like, I still wonder when that is, how that's going to look like. Because until we all feel comfortable with gathering again, It might be a while before these leagues play in front of packed houses. They may play, but playing in front of packed houses, that may be a while before we get to do that. So it's very, very complex. SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you'd be a part of Wake Up Call. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So I saw this story yesterday, and I thought it was an April Fool's joke. And apparently it is not an April Fool's joke, and it's actually going to go down. But if you told me it was an April Fool's joke, remember, my guard was up. So it appears that Tom Brady is going to be on the Howard Stern show to talk about everything.
Really?
Now on a week from yesterday.
Ooh.
But again, it came out yesterday, and I was really like, I don't know about this one. I bet you this is an April Fool's joke. I wasn't 100% sure, although people say it was confirmed. So I'm not going to confirm it because I'm not in the know. But if it does go down, this could be really interesting because Howard Stern's the best interviewer in the history of the medium by a mile. And if there's anybody that can get Tom Brady to break down a little bit and the shield can come down and he can talk about his relationship with Belichick, it would be Howard Stern. Stern can make this happen. He's made it happen for a lot in a lot of his interviews. You know, he's one of those guys, listen, I talk to young broadcasters a lot, and I give them advice on careers and, you know, my ups and downs and some obstacles that I've had. But I always tell them, I was like, if you want to be a good interviewer, if you want to ask good questions, if you really want to control the interview, you need to listen to Howard Stern the way he does it. He's the best, and he's the best by, again, 1,000 miles of anybody in the business. He has this way of getting people to talk about things they would not talk about with anybody else. There is a comfort level that people have when they sit on his couch and are sharing everything. It's like being in a psychiatrist's office. You know, any other person could not get certain celebrities to talk about their alcoholism, talk about living on the streets, talking about being in an abusive relationships, or talking about being in an abusive marriage, or some of the real serious things. Like, he's gotten the fun stuff out, of course. Oh, what was it like to be one of the most popular singers in the world? And what's it like to have all these girls chasing you? And, you know, all those things that you kind of... But he can dive into somebody's background because he's got a lot of research and he's well-prepared. And he can get people to open up about really serious stuff. I mean, again, he can be all fun and games, but he can really get you to talk about the father that never gave you any attention or whatever it is that your life's demons have. Now, in this situation, he's going to talk about his marriage to Giselle, and I bet you it gets a little personal. It could get a little sexual, right? I mean, I'm sure he's going to go down that avenue with Brady.
You would be surprised if it didn't.
Right, of course. That's kind of his MO. It's kind of some of the things that he does. But I guarantee you there's going to be a penetration into this relationship that he has with Belichick, and I'm really curious as how guarded Brady is going to be sitting down. Because here is the other thing. A lot of people can't get to Stern's level because, one, Stern's been doing it for 40 years, right? He's been doing it forever. But one of the other things is when you agree to go on the show, there is an expectation of what that's going to be. You don't go on his show to promote a book without all of this. You want to promote a TV project you're doing? You want to promote an album? You want to promote whatever? You sit on that couch and you tell us about your drug alcohol, your drug abuse issues in the past. You talk about the you getting arrested for hitting your girlfriend that caused you to spend a couple of nights in jail. You talk about those things if you want to promote whatever it is you're promoting. And that a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people don't have that sort of known entity. Like, I know I'm walking into the lion's den. That's what he does. So if I agree to do this, I'm walking into the lion's den.
I mean, basically, if you or I were to interview him, right, there's like a fine line that we have to stay on.
Sure.
Because we could easily upset him. because he's not expecting it from us. We can't. It's almost like there's, even though there's no rules, it's almost as if, you know, we can't get as personal as he is because, you know, of who we are. He's developed, I mean, Howard Stern, I mean, he's a shock jock.
Yeah.
That's how he made his money. He did not care about what anyone was going to say. He was going to say exactly what he was thinking, what he was feeling. It didn't matter what the subject was. And I think now as it gets getting later years, it's kind of delved away from the crazy antics to you're probably the best interviewer in the game.
Yeah, and the other,
you know that he's going to ask these persons. You walk in, like you said, Tom Brady walks in there. He knows he's going to get asked these questions.
And the other thing too is that he knows, and the person sitting down knows, he doesn't need you in that room to continue his success.
Yes.
So that's the ace in his hand. So you can come. It doesn't matter who you are. I was watching him interview Paul McCartney. He's getting Paul McCartney to break down about John Lennon and Yoko Ono, and he's getting all about the Beatles and some of the problems that they had, all this stuff. And I'm sure Paul McCartney has answered this in a lot of other ways, but there was a way Paul McCartney was talking to Stern as if he was on, like, again, like a doctor's couch. Like, yeah. It was incredible. But even Paul McCartney, right? Even a Beatle, right? Stern doesn't need the interview.
No, right? I mean, that's
like
the thing.
If he doesn't need the interview, he doesn't. I don't. You can go. You can leave now if you want.
If we do that, we run the risk of spurning a team or spurning a good PR person.
It's happened to me in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Rep is like, oh, see ya, we're never talking to you again.
I was in Charleston, South Carolina, and I was talking to one of their football coaches, and next thing you know, they said, nah, he's not going on again. And I was asking about recruits and things like that, and I was like, you had a controversy with this. And he said, nah, they're not going on with you anymore. And I was like, why? I was like, it was a simple question. It was easy, but they didn't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So that happened to me once. And then I was like explaining it, and we had to go over the tape, and they said, no, that was a pretty good question. I was like, I didn't ask him, like, you know, his relationship with his wife or anything. I was talking about this recruit that chose to go there and then didn't want to go there.
And the other thing that won't happen if you appear on the Howard Stern show, whoever the PR handler is, whoever's dealing with, they're not going to ask him, hey, can you edit that question out?
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely.
Can you take that interview down?
Again, you go in there knowing what the game is. So Brady knows what the game is, right? Now, Brady he doesn't have to answer anything, right? But it's unlikely.
But it's unlikely
that he agreed to do this without an idea that he can get some of his story out the way he wants to get it out.
And it almost will look worse.
Of course.
If he doesn't answer.
Of course.
Because then you're like, okay, what's he hiding? I mean, you know, you talk about, remember when he wouldn't give up his cell phone? I mean, you know, that was a perfectly logical thing not to give up your cell phone.
Exactly.
But we kind of, you know, media, I'm not saying we, you know, but we kind of spurned that away. Like, okay, he's hiding something. If he's not willing to give up his.
Well, some did, right.
You know, yeah, I'm saying media in general.
Right.
You know, took that as, oh, he's hiding something. You know, why wouldn't you give up your cell phone to the feds? I would give up my cell phone to the feds. I'm not hiding it. I mean, you know, he could have racy pictures on there.
Yeah, but here's the thing with that. I would like to hear his side on that. Like, I would like to hear him
of
say,
course.
Look, hold on. I'm not giving up. Like, I'm not in a position to give. You know, it was the NFL that wanted the cell phone, not the feds.
Okay.
So there's no FBI investigation into a deflated football.
Well, it almost went to the Supreme Court. I thought the CIA was involved.
The NFL wanted his, but what he could say is, look, what people didn't understand at the time is they didn't have subpoena power on this. They had public relations power on this. I didn't have to give them my cell phone. Like, there was no law that said I had to give him this evidence, but they could win the PR war if I didn't give him he could tell that side of the story and lay it out to say, look, the NFL was trying everything in its power to get me, and I didn't know what they would do with that phone. Like, like you said, he could have had pictures on there that he didn't want. I have no idea who's handling the phone if I give it to the NFL. We're talking about a league that has who is going to look through my phone, see a personal picture of my wife, and next thing you know, it's on TMZ for $500,000, right? I'm not, you know, like he. I would love to hear Brady talk about that side of the story. That would be great. I would love for him to say, we won a Super Bowl, and I felt like my coach didn't appreciate me.
Have many current athletes, I mean, current athletes have been on the Howard Stern Show, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering.
I think.
I mean, yeah, I know. I don't know.
He's not a huge sports guy. So it's,
right.
It's, you know, it's but not I'm, like, remember Roy Firestone back in the day?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Not,
he used to make, yeah. Yeah. He used to
make you cry, right? Yeah.
I always, every single time I think about that, I always think about Jerry Maguire.
I know. Right?
You're not going to do it, Roy. You're not going to make me cry.
Yeah, he's not a Roy Firestone type, so he doesn't know a lot.
No, but I wonder if, I mean, he knows enough, and he's got, you know, Howard Stern's got to know the relationship between Roger Goodell and Tom Brady. And I'm wondering if he'll ask Tom Brady about his relationship with Goodell, and if Brady will be honest.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Stern is going to be really prepared for this, like super prepared. Like his researchers got all the, there is so much, 20 years of playing in the NFL, 20 years of playing in the NFL and some of the Spygate stuff from Spygate to Deflategate to all of the stuff. To,
yeah. And I
mean, it could be really eye popping if indeed this is happening.
And you can almost guarantee he's not going to ask. So what was your favorite moment?
Right.
You know, which out of the six Super Bowls you won, which one was your favorite? Yeah, he's not going to ask those questions.
So he might even ask him about, like, so you had a kid with Bridget Moynihan.
Of course, like, better.
So you had a kid. Like, you had a kid with this actress, and then you just dumped her? What was you doing? I didn't really dump her. I mean, but you're not with her anymore. Yeah, I know, but I mean, at the time, it was, you know.
Were you dating Giselle at the same time when you had this kid?
So you've got this Brazilian supermodel that dated Leonardo DiCaprio. That had to have been horrible, right? Like Leonardo was already doing, you know, hanging out with her and being dating her. And then you know, what was that? You know, is Leo one up? Like, this is the kind of stuff he's going to do.
You ever talk to Leo?
Yeah. You ever
compare notes with Leo?
Exactly.
Do you ask Giselle to compare notes?
Does she ever call you Leo? like it's that's how personal it's going to be. And so you're going to have to weave. You're going to have to get through all of that. To get to the meat of Bill Belichick's got to be a jerk, right? You hate him, right? You hate him. That's the kind of stuff he does. That's the kind of interview technique he does do. Like,
yeah.
when he
needles at you.
Right. But he did that in the Paul McCartney interview. He's like, Yoko must have drove you crazy, right? Come on. You must. Oh, no, John was in love with her. I mean, what do you. Nah, I know, but still. I mean, she's in there all the time. She's talking. Come on. Well, she was getting, like, you know, it was problematic. You know, that's what he does. That's how he does it. He makes you feel like you're on, you know, we're together on this. Like, yeah. I get it.
Well,
you
he makes
it.
You feel like no one's listening.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that it's just you and him sitting there just talking over a few beers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, basically without saying it, he's like, dude, you know, it's just you and I. I'm not going to tell anyone.
Yeah. We're not just you, me, and just forget these microphones are on. They're not on. So I'm as a guy who loves good interviews from a guy that really likes that kind of stuff. Because you and I and everybody else who would have watched this guy for 20 years, he is the most stonewalled athlete I have ever seen in 20 years.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Oh, I got a story
about
that. I
mean, nothing. All right. Well, we're going to get that coming up. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, and this portion of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Pearl Jam, right?
Pearl Jam.
You got it.
First one you guessed on. Did you
know,
the
I'm
other?
Sorry. Well, what were the others real quick?
Well, we had Bush.
Right.
Everything Zen, that started it off. Then Sponge.
Oh, okay.
With their song Plowed, and then the last one, or before this one, was Good by Better Than Ezra.
Better Than Ezra, nice. 1995, Throwback Thursday. All right, so what were you saying about...
So last night, you know, David Blaine had a magic special. If you haven't watched it, watch it, because the dude's an alien. He's an alien. But he was doing it with a lot of athletes, which was really entertaining. I mean, he was pulling jokes, or pulling tricks on... Anthony Davis and LeBron. I mean, he basically was in the Lakers practice center.
Did he make a card come out of a basketball after you
chopped it in half? He's way beyond that. Come on now. Oh, that's child's play.
That's child's play.
But there was one.
The witch.
There was one, and I'm just wondering, like, I don't understand how these get-togethers happen. I don't know if somebody's like, hey, you know, I have David Blaine coming to my house. You want to come? Because there was one, it was a party. I don't know whose house it was, but John Krasinski was there with Justin Timberlake and Chelsea Clinton.
So they had he shows up to a party with some celebrities to do some magic.
Well, no, I think he's like saying, maybe he's like, you know, hey, John Krasinski, I'm going to show up at your house. Why don't you have a little get together, invite some of your friends over?
Yeah.
And then Krasinski goes, oh, you know, I'll call, you know, Timberlake's in town. He's doing Fallon or Saturday Night Live. I'll have him come over. And Chelsea, she lives here, so I'll have her come over too.
Right.
You know, and you sit there like, how does this group ever get together? Yeah. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Right.
You know, and he did a thing like, I mean, he, you know, sewed his mouth shut and did a card trick without ever speaking. And, you know, the card that they were looking for was in his mouth.
Oh, God, I wish I watched that, because he really is. He is a sorcerer. Witchcraft. I mean, it's crazy.
I bring it up because he actually did it at Tom Brady's house. He went into Tom Brady's house. And it was weird because it was almost like a personal look in Tom Brady's house. No, two things that stood out in my mind the entire time. One, Giselle is fun. You know, I really don't know much about her at all. But I can watching this, I can see how fun she is, because when she got, and you know, if Tom ever gets yelled at, it's in Spanish or Portuguese. Because whenever she got really excited, she just immediately went into Portuguese. But the other thing I saw, he didn't say much at all during the entire time. And he always had his back to the camera. Like, he wouldn't show the front of himself. And it was just weird. I think it was just maybe just positioning, because where David was performing. But I thought that was kind of odd. And we just never, like, the cameraman never panned around to see, you know, let's see Tom Brady's reaction. We never got
Interesting. It's Wake Up Call.